I'm not going mad.
Welcome to Gatekeeper, a podcast about booking from the bookers and gatekeepers who decide who's in, who's out. Also, there's other stuff.
And now, your host of Gatekeeper, artistic director of the Hollywood Improv, Jamie Flam.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Gatekeeper. I am Gatekeeper Jamie Flam.
I'm going to put a cool effect over that.
Sounds good.
For this first episode, I thought it would be perfect to invite the talent coordinator at the Comedy Store, Adam Egett. And the Comedy Store right now is going through its own renaissance. And Adam and I have a lot in common. We both kind of been thrown into the fire of the world of club booking. And he was very open about the challenges that he's faced and continues to face. And as different as our clubs are, we still deal with a lot of the same politics, the same egos, and at the same time experience the same victories and joys of this comedy world that we live in. So I think he's the perfect first guest. I'm excited. We had a great conversation. This took place back in December when we first started recording these episodes. So I think comedians and everyone else should get a lot out of it, and I hope you enjoy.
Gatekeeper.
This is our first show, and I'm really excited. Our first guest, it was a get. An EGET. I just came up with it right now. I'm joined right now by the talent coordinator at the Comedy Store, the world famous Comedy Store, Adam EGET, who is also, do you still do the co-host with Norm Macdonald?
No, we're working on a sizzle reel still. So
awesome.
He's busy. He's finishing his book and he's got, you know, he's busy being the colonel. So
I love it. And he's literally
he's the colonel now.
KFC.
Yeah, KFC.
Yeah. Wow, that's a big.
Almost wonder if he got it from the show because we had a few, it was almost a running gag where he gained a lot of weight and in the beginning of the shows would just be eating a giant bucket, a bucket of KFC chicken. So I'm assuming someone must have seen that. But yeah.
Would you join him with the chicken?
Oh yeah. I did some, well, I think I was on a diet at that point, but yeah, I've been known to, I recently
dive into a bucket.
Eating meat though. Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. Just fish.
You only eat fish.
Just fish.
You're a pescatarian.
Yeah, pescatarian.
We're getting to the stuff that I thought we were only going to get to like 45 minutes in.
Yeah, we can save this for episode 3 or 4.
Absolutely. You're also in Joe Dirt 2.
But yeah, very briefly. That was fun. It was a fun experience.
Awesome. So, welcome. Welcome to the first episode.
Thanks for
of
having
Gakiver.
Me. Yeah, you know, anything for you, Jamie. Love you.
And as I said before the show, like the purpose of this podcast is to talk to other bookers, people in positions where they're booking people for all sorts of stuff, and kind of demystify it a little bit, get into the nitty gritty.
It's a great idea.
And, you know, our job is insane.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
And as you were just saying, being able to point to something that, because, you know, we're approached by comics and by the industry all the time.
Yeah.
And to be able to kind of talk about these things in a way that they can consume it very easily. So I guess the first question I have for you is, you've been booking for like a year now?
I think just over a year, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I believe it's been just over a year. Maybe in October it was a year. Just sort of thrown into this, you know?
Tell us how you got there.
I worked at the Tempe Improv in Arizona. That's how I met Paige.
Paige is one of our managers.
Yes.
At
I worked over there for about 7 years. I used to manage the improv. And then I'm originally from Los Angeles. I moved back home to Los Angeles. And a friend of mine told me that they were looking for a manager at the Comedy Store. And I wasn't even thinking about it, frankly. And it just sort of happened. They wanted to meet with me and I went in for an interview and I was hired initially as an assistant manager.
Mm-hmm.
And then, about a year and a half later, I became the general manager, only in duties, I don't think I ever officially got the title. They always had some strange titles, but I did everything. I ordered literally everything. I worked there. I virtually lived at the store. And then about a year ago, the old talent coordinator left, and I was asked to replace him. And initially, I said, absolutely not. And they asked me again, and I said, no, again.
Why no?
Oh, I knew how difficult, what a headache it was. I mean, I got a taste of it in Tempe when I was managing over there, and I had a lot of comics because it's you work at these, so you're the talent coordinator or the booker. You're
artistic director.
You're the director over here at the Improv. So, you know, the structure is different at the other, at the Improvs versus the Comedy Store or here even, where the, it's a MC and that's usually a local guy. Mm-hmm. And then you have the feature who traditionally, I think for the most part, maybe half and half.
Are you talking about the road clubs right now?
Yeah, the road clubs. Yeah. Sorry about that. The road clubs. So like in Tempe, so I have to deal with a lot of, that was my first taste of what it was like to be a booker, where you have a lot of local comics, you know, asking and just kind of up your ass about getting a MC gig or a feature gig. And I was never a big fan of saying no. I don't like saying no. I hate it. I don't like, yeah, some people get off on it. Some people I think are really, they take to the position for the same reasons that I have a hard time with it.
Great. And we've always been kindred spirits in that way.
Yeah.
I built a reputation as a nice guy.
Exactly.
And now I have to say no every day.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you initially said no when they first offered me the job, because I started in the lab, mm-hmm. which was kind of a little alt-y side room.
Right.
And that was, you know, very creative and fun. And it was not the stand-up comedy club world.
Right.
And I got to know it. But when they offered me the job, I needed a week. And I had enough people tell me I was crazy. Like, when you offered the job to book the Hollywood Improv, you take it.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad I did. And I've learned a lot. But I understand that instinct.
Oh, yeah.
So they begged you.
A fantastic opportunity. I knew that I knew it was really important. And I had been at the Comedy Store for about four and a half years at that point when they initially offered me the job of a booker. And at that, you know, after about 4 years, you really care about the place, and you really
family.
Yeah, it is a family. So I saw some of the resumes coming in and some of the people they were potentially considering to replace the old booker, and I just knew that it would be ugly, because I don't think that any of those people they were considering, really, not to talk bad about them or to discredit their talents or their experience. I just think that every club's wildly different, mm-hmm. you know that. And I think that the Comedy Store in particular has a real feel. It's a family. It's a close knit community, just like the Improv. They're just different. And I didn't want to potentially damage what made the Comedy Store special, much as I'm sure you would work as hard as you can to preserve what makes the Improv so special.
Tell me, like, did anyone train you, or did they just kind of throw you in the fire? And
yeah, like I said, I worked at the Improv for about 7 years, and I've been around. You know, I've absorbed comedy like a sponge for as long as I can remember, and I think working in the comedy clubs as long as I have, and just seeing show after show, comic after comic, I think that seeing the lineups over every night, you know, for years on end, that you really get a feel. You can kind of get an understanding of what it's all about and how to. I watched Tommy pretty closely, and mm-hmm. I could see his lineups, and I know that he learned a lot from Mitzi. So you look at the lineups, and you're like, oh, I can. After looking at the lineups on paper and then seeing them unfold in real time, night after night, mm-hmm. you start to form an understanding of why he made some of the decisions he did concerning the lineup specifically. Like, oh, I could see why you would follow him with her, or vice versa, or, you know. Someone told me, who is it? Tommy, I think, used to say it, and Argus really hammered the point home when I first took over, that Mitzi used to create the lineups and look at it as a blank canvas, and mm-hmm. I think I'm way less of an artist she was, and I have a lot more going on behind the scenes that go into the lineups when I create them. Mm-hmm. But I always try and keep that in mind, and I try and look at it as a canvas and think about the show unfolding as I place people in the position I put them in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
The Comedy Store has changed significantly in the last year, or at least it's felt like that from the outside. And it seems like you coming in and having some sort of Or let me ask you, did you have some sort of plan in place to kind of revamp it or change the vibe?
Well, no, I think it's sort of misleading to a lot of people. They'll come up and they'll say that. And thank you, by the way. I really appreciate that. But I don't, I think it's so many different things. I think that it's, again, I never had a problem with Tom. I mean, we'll talk the elephant in the room here. Everyone knows it's Tommy. Tommy and I always, we got along for the most part. I mean, almost, I can't remember any real problems I had with Tommy because I didn't have to deal with him, you know. I understand why a lot of comics had a lot of problems with Tommy. And I think once the transition, once the dust settled, I think that a lot of those comics, or most of them, I don't want to speak for everyone, and this is just my opinion. I think a lot of the comics that had a problem with Tommy blamed Tommy for where they were at in their careers or their were just in life, I guess. And I think once they realized that all these spots didn't magically appear once Tommy left, I think those people probably realized that he, you know, he wasn't the reason for, I don't know, their...
No, that totally makes sense.
Where they're at in their careers and their comedy or whatever. And I don't want to, I'm certainly not going to name names or I'm not trying to belittle anyone. It's just, you know what it's like. There's so many people in this industry and there's so few spots available.
I've always envied about the store versus the improv. And one of the main differences is that we don't have a pass system here.
Oh, yeah.
We are an industry club.
That's awesome.
And so,
both good pros and cons to both.
The pro to me that I envy is that you have a list of comics that are past that can get up.
Yes.
And that's it.
Right. But then I also have a list of development comics. Mm-hmm. So, and there's two different paths. You can pass someone to be a paid regular, mm-hmm. and then you can pass someone to be a non-paid regular. So I see what you're saying, but I still have to say no to everyone.
Right.
To spots at one point or another. And I'm sorry, and I didn't even answer that question. I'm sorry, I went off on a tangent. I guess what I was saying is that there's so many people that come into play to the way the landscape's changed at the store in particular. And I think that these consultants came in and they brought in this gentleman, Eric Anderson, who took over as the general manager. And his strengths are... He's so good at what he does, and he is has just been invaluable to making the place run smoother and putting things into place and policies into place and structure and really cut down cost. He's been great at what he does, and that's something that I wasn't particularly strong. I didn't have that much experience at, and he has a ton. So. With him coupled with me bringing in a lot of the people that I wanted to bring in, who I felt should have been passed a long time ago, I think that helped. Well, like David Spade was never passed for some reason.
Which is insane.
Yeah, that is just insane to me. I mean, he's an icon, and he's still writing new material, and he really has me in stitches every time.
Oh, me too.
I know he performs here more than anywhere. So I think that, yeah, you understand what I'm talking about.
What are the politics of you? Do you have to go to a board or someone and say, David Spade's never been passed. How do we get him?
Initially, I did.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, he was the first person I passed. And it was just such a, I hate the phrase no-brainer, but I've never seen a clear case of a no-brainer in my life. But then you have, so what people don't realize is that where Tommy had free reign to do whatever the hell he wanted. And I'm not saying that as I'm not trying to put him down. I'm just saying that's just the fact where he didn't really have to answer to anybody and he could do whatever he felt. And he was big on feel and the building's feelings. And
you're not big on feelings.
No, I am, but I have so much more to consider. I have to make lineups,
Oh, you have
lucrative.
A business.
Exactly.
Well,
concerned. I'm equally concerned with trying to put up people that I feel are comedy store esque. I think that offer brings something to the table that other comics at other clubs wouldn't. So I think that there's a certain, you know, you have your Sam Kinisons and the late night at the Comedy Store. I was like a I'd never seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first came in, that was some of my favorite moments were late night at the Comedy Store, and it's just a circus.
I think that's actually a quick segue is that the store, and that's part of the reason you're the first guest, is that we have such a symbiotic relationship.
Absolutely.
And such a mutual admiration.
Definitely.
Just to expand on that a little bit is what you guys do in developing comedians. And it's, I've gotten to understand the club structure in LA a lot more. You know, the improv is the showcase club where mm-hmm. you come to do your polished stuff.
Right.
In theory, not that we don't have workout shows and right. stuff like that, but you're doing the heavy lifting of just, you know, training these people to do their thing.
Right.
And so, and Rita Piazza, who will be our GM, a guest very soon.
Nice. I love her.
She's
so
always
goddamn
just
much.
Sung the praises because, we wouldn't be what we are without you.
That's such a, it's such a great point, and you really articulated that expertly. I think that's absolutely true. And Mitzi, if you noticed on the hill in the parking lot above where the house is, it says main room original, main room belly room workout,
mm-hmm.
and the OR she always considered the workout room, and that's where the heavy lifting. It's a gym, and I try and keep that intact. I spend a lot of my time just trying to do whatever I can to keep Mitzi's integrity and her original vision intact as much as possible, while also doing what I can to add my own, my own signature on.
Yeah, I think that's very evident in the last year.
But then I have to consider, my employers who need to see. So my first goal was to increase the numbers. And so I did that by making the strongest lineups as I could, as possibly could, and just pack it with big draws and headliners and such. And once I got past that, then I had to keep, I have other employers who are trying to, who like to get their people
totally
across, and I have to, it's not my club. So
I think
of course
that's
I have to,
such a good thing to focus on for a minute for listeners that are comics that don't quite understand it. When I was starting in comedy, I had no perception of that, but these are businesses that need to make money
Absolutely.
To keep their doors open.
Definitely.
And we have bosses.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I see comics come in and they'll, look through all the lineups. By the way, when they look through the lineups, all they see is that their name is not on it.
Exactly.
They don't see Joe Rogan, David Spade, whoever
right,
it is.
Right.
All they see
and
is
if their
the
name is on it.
Name.
They're not. They're. Why am I going up at this time?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And that's how a comic thinks.
Yeah.
But it helps me, and I explain that to young comics all the time. Is like, we have directives, the politics, and making sure here and probably more so than you is making sure the industry is happy, meaning getting their clients up. For showcases and stuff like that.
Yeah, but that's got to be, that's something I have to deal with a lot less than you do. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, what is your stance with the industry?
I know what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I always thought that it would be incredibly, I thought it would be way more beneficial to us to welcome industry with open arms. I think it certainly would help our younger comics. So I feel look, before I took the job and the biggest, one of the biggest reasons I was hesitant and apprehensive to accepting the job was because I knew that I would lose a lot of, and I'm going to do air quotes, friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I was ready to accept the fact that a lot of these people probably weren't my friends who I thought were.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that that would eventually, that was inevitable, and that realization would suck. And it has. And it's every day I start to, see more and more.
I get that.
But then, it's that old cliche, and then you find out who your friends truly are. But that's true, and it's real.
No, and this job forces you. I mean, I was always a people pleaser.
Yeah.
To this day, I am. I want everyone to like me.
I know.
But it's forced me, like it's forced you. Like, there's no getting around it.
No. You can't make anyone happy. They say you can't make everyone happy. In this job, you can't make anyone happy.
No. Fact. People are happy for the 10 minutes they're on stage when you book them, or 15 minutes, or whatever it is.
Right.
But even then, that comes with a chip on the shoulder.
But there's always something. There's always something they're not happy about. Why am I not doing 30 minutes?
Right.
Why am I going up at 10 o'clock and not 10:15?
Why am I following this person?
Yeah. Why are you not passing my friend?
Right.
Why aren't you giving my opener more spots?
And that's
like
a whole
everybody
other.
Everybody has their own horses they're backing.
a whole other angle too, is comics, especially big ones. I get emails all the time from people I love that are regulars, and they're
I respect them.
Can you hook up this young comic? And that's just another pressure. Shit, I want to make them happy.
Not only young, but old. Like, you know, hey, this guy, you know, hasn't worked in a while. And he was my mentor or whatever.
Right.
And then it's like, that's when it comes into play, and you understand, where you just kind of have to go across the board and just be like, it's a tricky thing, man. You really have a, you have a real fine line you have to walk, because you don't want to. I respect these guys so much, and these women so much, that that ask that of you sometimes, and you just have to try and maintain your integrity and do what you, and just always do what you feel is right. So I'll always say the same thing. Hey, I'll put them up on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And I always watch, like, I'm always going to be familiar with somebody set before I just flat out say no. So that's why I always try and have them go up on Monday and watch them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they blow me away, but they really have to blow you away, because these spots are so precious, man. They're so few. And I already have the people in the system. The majority of them are furious at me as it is, because they've gone from four spots a week to two.
Right.
Or, you know, two to one or one to none.
How do you, do you have a tactic? Are you always super upfront? Uh-huh. Have you gotten better about that in the last year?
From day one, I've always been, say what you will about me, I'm not perfect. I'm far fucking from it.
No.
I've got them. I mean, we both know that.
Look at that jean jacket.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
And your hair. Perfectly coiffed.
Yeah, okay. No, I mean, but I will, I always try and be as honest as possible. But there's a huge difference between being honest with someone and straightforward and not blowing smoke up someone's ass or beating around the bush and being hurtful.
Right.
And I don't want to, it takes a lot for me to flat out tell someone I don't find them funny, because I know that's the worst thing you want to hear. Is a, it's like a chef. You tell a chef that you don't like their cooking. That's their thing. That's it. What else do they have? That's their livelihood. That's what they're most passionate about. So, unless my back's against the wall and you're forcing me, I'll say, I unfortunately don't have spots for you. And if I might, then I'll tell them, hey, keep calling in. And if it works out 1 week and I have a lot of people out of town, absolutely.
And so that's in theory, that's past comedians.
Yeah.
So if you're a past, there's no guarantee.
No.
Never. No.
No. There's certain people that get every spot they call in for.
Sure.
And there's certain people. So what I do is every week I take all of the availability. So
how many is that?
You know how that works? Do we do it the same way? I don't know if we do, but
I think you have a more archaic system. People actually call in, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's certain people will call out, but most people call in. And then the phone guys will call the stragglers, people who don't call in, just to check to see if they're available.
And how many people are on this list?
Oh, God, there's pages. Yeah, pages.
Like hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And you're phone calling all of them.
Wall. Yeah. So they call. So we scheduled a second door. So we have two phone guys in the morning and then another one in the afternoon shift on Monday. And they call in their availability for the week. And then I come in on Monday night and I take a look at that list and I write Tuesday, and then I write every comic that calls in their Tuesday available on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go through and I'll put a little star next to any name who is a, would I would consider to be a big draw or incredibly funny. So like, for instance, I'll name names. So it's like Rick Ingram, is not a big draw. I wish he was. And I'm working on it. I'll do whatever I can.
Yeah. But
he's one of the, everybody has their few that are like, God, this guy really deserves it. Or Fahim Anwar, you know, he's gonna, I feel like it's real soon for Fahim.
Oh, he's gonna break. He's so great.
So it's like those people I would not consider a big draw yet, but I would consider the cream of the crop.
Totally.
So I put a star next to them. And then other than that, it's just the Dullias and the Rogans and the Marins, the big draws, Spades. So then I take a look at the lineup, and there's certain people you can't put up past 11.
Right.
So I'll go through and I'll do the lineup and I'll do the same thing for each day, just like I explained for Tuesday. If that, I don't know if that made any sense,
no, but totally.
Then I'll go down the list of names in the availability sheet and I'll put a little tally mark next to each one of their names that got a spot that day. Then we'll do the same for Wednesday. And then at the end, I'll look through and I'll check the tallies, and I try and keep it even where there I have my three spot guys. And then I have, she gets two a week, so I have to make sure she gets two, but he needs to get at least three, but he only got two. So then I have to mix and match, and that's the painstaking part. And that's the part that I don't want to. Well, how do I say? All right. So,
well, how long?
I had a bar mitzvah. I think I'm allowed to say this.
Was there a theme to your bar mitzvah?
I consider it's a lot like a much more shallow version of the end of Schindler's List, where it's like, oh, two spots. I could have got two spots for this guy or three spots for this woman. So it's like my list. That's my little list.
And how long does that process take? And that's once a week?
It takes hours. It takes 2 or 3 hours. I just want to be fair. I want to be fair, but then I also have to try and do what I think is right. And then I also have to make sure that this employer gets his people that he wants on the lineup. Mm-hmm. And then I have to make sure that this employer's happy and can smile on the way to the bank every week. And then I have to make sure that I have, every demographic is try and keep them represented.
Totally.
So there's so much involved.
That's such a good way of explaining it to a lot of people. I mean, it's insane, that balancing act.
Yeah.
And you're doing a great job.
It is what it is.
I look at those lineups at the store and I'm envious.
I can't tell you, I sincerely appreciate it, especially coming from you, because you know how much I respect you and what you do. But I think that it depends on who you ask. You'll say the lineups are great and I'm doing a great job, and there's going to be just as many people that are saying that have the opposite thing to say, and that's just the way it is. And it took me a long time to accept it. I don't know if I fully accepted it, but I think every day I'm getting closer to the. I don't really care. I can't.
Do you sleep at night?
I was just going to say it's hard. not much.
I will just randomly throughout the day or in the night, a comic will appear in my brain, and I'll be like, "Fuck, I haven't written them in a month."
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I'll wake up and then I'll hit the emails and then I'll say, hey, why the fuck aren't you booking me? And
how many emails do you get a day?
Oh, I mean.
And how do you track them? Teach me, because I still, it's been 5 years and I still can't do it.
Teach me. I mean, look at this. Where's my, you can just look at the numbers here. It doesn't come up on my phone for some reason. Oh, well. It used to show you. I have so many unanswered and I try and answer every email, and
good
I've been
for
told
you.
I'm crazy.
I
prefer doing. Everybody has their own way, but I know I'm going to see these people within the next 24 hours or 7 days, and I prefer to, as opposed to just ignoring. I know I'm going to have to, be confronted or confront this person eventually. So I figure I might as well just right out the gate, and that's why honesty is important. I want to be honest.
That was my first couple of years too. Uh-huh. And this is advice I would give
you. Maybe I'll get to where you're at.
No, maybe you're a much better human being than me.
No, that's not true.
But I wish someone told me that there's not enough time in a day to do what I need to do for this club and return every email, because I get hundreds and hundreds. And I email everyone back the first couple of years until the point where now it's like, I cannot. I just don't, and I feel bad. I might see them and I'll just, hopefully it won't come up.
I take it back. There are certain people, I think I'm starting to get to where you're at now.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first year. So now I've slowly stopped responding to, actually it's been months now where I don't respond to the people where if I haven't heard of you or, hey, I'm from such and such state and I've, whatever, if you're on the open mic circuit, I used to tell people like, hey, yeah, come and sign up at 6:00.
Right.
But if they're just like, yeah, book me and I don't know who you are and you're not in this Comedy Store system, I don't have time to respond.
Yeah.
And it's not, and I'm not trying to be a dick. It's just like what you said. I don't have the time.
No, I think that's an important point to get across to any comics that are listening is that, to any booker of anywhere, like they're getting dozens and hundreds of emails a day. And it's not personal. It really isn't. No. In the same way, when I'm reaching out to the biggest names, if I don't hear back, I'm not taking it personally.
Exactly.
If I'm reaching out to Louis C.K.'s people and I don't hear back ever, he's a busy guy.
Yeah, exactly.
But comics take everything personally.
Oh, definitely.
But it never is. Well, maybe sometimes it is. Which leads to another point. It's just how much do you have to deal with like persistent people? I mean, obviously a lot, and assholes.
That's perfect that you led right into that, because that's what I was just going to say, is that everybody has their – I know Mitzi believed that she really was big on persistence and people that would keep pushing. But it was a much different time. Mm-hmm. There weren't as many comics. There weren't – it's like I appreciate tenacity as much, but it's a – it gets really annoying after a while, because if – look – if you're really, really funny, I'm in there every Monday. I see a lot of comics go up. And then I have people in my ear. It's like, I'll either hear about it from someone else that I respect, mm-hmm. or I'm just going to have to take notice on my own based on your talent alone. Mm-hmm. But if you're a self-promoter and that's how I have to find out about it, chances are, A, you're not that great. Because 99% of the time, that's what it turns out to. And I don't want to sound cold or callous. That's just the way I've seen it go.
And it's weird because you're taught in every field in this country is like, you got to go for it.
Yeah.
And I can tell when I get that email from someone that just read like some inspirational book. Also, at the beginning of every year, everyone's like, this is the year I'm going for it.
Right.
I'll get my emails or twice as much. And I respect that. And I that's another art to that. And there are a handful of people that are persistent, and if you have the talent to back it up,
exactly, you get it. Then it's great. But the way I've found it to be is that that's not the case. I think that a lot of these people are just starting out, and they just need to. I say the same thing to everyone. I think that it's the best thing to do is to go up as much as possible, and if you're passionate about it, then you'll hopefully stay passionate about it. Mm-hmm. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. But I think that it's important to go up as much as possible. But there's so many different clubs and there's so many different rooms. There's so many different bars right now. And it doesn't have to be, you know, the Comedy Store is just one club.
Yep.
And I don't have that many spots available. I have none. So because of that, and because things have changed so drastically, and I think that the market might be a little oversaturated at the moment.
It's crazy right now how many shows there are every single night.
And it's not just the state. Like I moved out to Arizona and I lived out there for 10 years, and just hearing about all the clubs that have opened up just since I've moved 5 years ago is insane.
Yeah.
So it's not just this market. The comedy, it's a big boom right now, mm-hmm. and that's fantastic, but there's a lot of people that are trying to become comedians. And I think that naturally I think nature, you know, it's just nature has a way of separating the wheat from the chaff on its own. Comedy's subjective. I'm just one guy. It's just
that's
an
true.
Opinion. I'm not, and I think that's what separate. And again, I don't want to talk shit about Tommy because I never had a problem with the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was a character. I thought it was, he made me laugh. And I got along really well with him.
Mm-hmm.
We were wildly different though. He wouldn't agree. I'm sure he wouldn't agree with 90% of the things that decisions I've made. And I didn't agree with a lot of the decisions he made, but, I agree with a lot of the things he said and a lot of his views. Not a lot of the, controversial ones, but a lot of the views on comedy,
mm-hmm.
I could understand.
Well, he really set the table for you to do what you're doing, which is
absolutely. I think that the way we differ is that I don't know. I'm not, I'm going to tell someone right out the gate. And I'm not saying he was dishonest with people, but I can't tell you how many goddamn comics came up to me the week or month after Tommy left and I took over that said, Tommy looked me square in the eye. He told me to my face that I was next to be passed. And I scores like over 20 for sure.
Yeah, that's
probably
crazy, yeah.
Probably closer to 30 people realistically came up and said the same thing. And I'm not saying there's a chance that some of them may be dishonest. I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think that he probably did, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to say, don't be discouraged by anything I say. It's meant to be, it's meant to be, but I want you to just keep going, go at it as hard as you can. Be passionate, stay passionate, work on your craft. And I'm just going to continue to do what I feel is right. And I don't want anyone to take that personal. Mm-hmm. It's just one guy's opinion.
Well, and it's also worth mentioning the turnover rate at the clubs. And when I started booking the main room almost 4 years ago, my boss told me, look, the shelf life of your position is 2 years. That's when people are either burnt out or they're scooped up by another company. So I've already almost doubled that, which I can't believe.
That's crazy.
But there is this turnover. And remembering now when I transitioned, same thing, you know, dozens of emails and people coming up saying, or even like a year later, like, you know, when Emily or Eric was booking, like I would get up like twice a week. And now they haven't been up in years.
Same story.
And that there's always going to be that turnover. So for comics to remember.
Definitely.
A, if there's a new booker at your club, give them some breathing room or her. Let them kind of figure things out. And that brings up one of the biggest words I deal with every day, and it's entitlement.
Yes. My biggest pet peeve.
I think that's the number one word.
That is the thing I hate more than anything.
When anyone comes to me with any sort of entitlement, I immediately put them at the bottom of the list.
1000% agree. I agree with that.
When I first started, and this is another tip, I don't think most people are doing it, but it's happened like 3 or 4 comics. They've called or they've come up to me like, look, I'm looking at some of these lineups and, you know, they're not that great. I'm better than that. I've gotten more brash in the last year or so where I'll just be like, well, first and foremost, the tact of telling me that the lineups that are being booked at the club that I book aren't great is just not very tactful.
Yeah.
Just everyone, and I get it, you know, like you're good. You had a TV credit and 5 years ago. Yeah. And I also get it. Like there's the ups and downs of this industry. And I always try to be artist friendly and I get it. But as soon as you come at me with, I deserve this and I'm better than what I'm getting.
Yep. Done. Same. God damn, we get the same emails. One example I'll give to that. I have to see him tonight, actually. I don't think I've seen him since this email. Similar story. Guy had been kicking around for a while. Never really got to that high tier. Was respected in the comedy community. Mm-hmm. Made some movies and did some TV spots and stuff like that. I was never a big fan. Personally, I was never a big fan of his comedy or his set. He wouldn't get a lot of spots. He'd get a spot once every month or two, maybe. Mm-hmm. What I did with a lot of these comics, out of respect to the time they put into the club, and just, I was always told to respect my elders anyway. And I try to do that as much as possible until I get to a point where, yeah, just like you said, where if you're coming at me a certain way, I don't give a fuck anymore at this point. They sent me an email and they did that tactic I hate, which is, some of the older comics I try and at least send down to La Jolla and maintain that, because we have at least that outlet, mm-hmm. just like you probably have, you know, to send to other improvs across the country. That's our La Jolla. So
for the record, no.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well,
otherwise I'll get a million emails.
We have that at
saying,
least.
Book me in.
But again, it all comes down to money. And if they're not drawing in La Jolla, eventually that well's going to run dry. I mean, you can't rest on your laurels and keep doing the same stale set you've been doing since the 80s and expect to just because of loyalty, just because it's not even loyalty. It's just, you're a senior member of the staff. Yeah. You have seniority almost, and you deserve the best shifts, but you're just going to come here and slack and talk shit to, you know, it's like,
exactly.
And you would, that's entitlement. And then the other, and so this particular comic, sent me a long email. Just like that. And then would throw all the, I've seen the lineup. I'm better than this person, throw all these other comics under the bus, which is huge for me. I hate that almost more than anything. Do it based on your ability. And if you want to make a case, plead your case, but don't throw all these other people under the bus because I obviously don't agree with you because I'm putting them on the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And B, it just makes you look bad. And then he signed it with, fuck you ignorant cunt.
I was just going to say fuck you, but that's even worse.
And that was his sincerely. And then was baffled. I think after a few days, I tried to apologize, but then was baffled why I wouldn't book him anymore. And it's like, you can't call someone an ignorant cunt. And then I probably wasn't going to book him again anyway, but That's just my fun little story. I'd love to, if I didn't, I'm not big on naming names and doing all that shit. But if I was, I'd have a hell, I'd love the coffee table book of some.
After we're done, we'll name some names.
It's been a real, wild.
Yeah. And just say, like, especially, I mean, a lot of the comics from the '80s and '90s, and it's like, you just have to be an artist and really grow and be getting up a lot, especially right. It's less of an issue maybe for you, but here it's like I get avails from, and sometimes it's, you know, people that are actors or actresses,
sure.
and they have their own sense of entitlement, like I'm on a show.
Yeah.
But
I don't care
if you're not a professional comedian,
exactly.
getting up 5, 6, 7 nights a week. That's what we want here. Pros bringing the best.
Yeah. Once every month or two, you have that real wild card, some actor. It's usually the same level. Or, mm-hmm. or they have that same sort of mentality, I'm not going to name names, but you get it.
Well, let me ask you this: like here, I have so few spots.
Yeah,
and there's, you know, we have our kind of a regular rotation,
of course.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But when a comic goes up and I'm able to, you know, throw a bone, or it's like I have an empty spot, and someone doesn't bring it, there is a lot more pressure here.
Yeah.
Where if this is your chance, and did he bring it or not? And it's not like make or break. I know that there's good audiences and not as great audiences, and
right,
you know, the context of the room can affect your set. But I always want to see someone, you know, do their best and bring it. And so it's important, at least here, to, you know, deliver a great set and be a professional. Like at the store, if someone has an off night, does that like greatly affect them?
Not necessarily here. So I'm more concerned with other things because when I throw this proverbial bone that you're speaking of, like that's, I think here it's wildly different than the store because you're going to be giving them a spot. Like those bones that I can throw out once in a while, mm-hmm. they'll occur towards the end of the lineup. I don't ever have. Oh, I got it. Sure, I got this 10:30 spot.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So it's like at the store, since we run till 2 a.m., those spots occur at the end of the night when it's 1:30, 2 a.m. So I'm not expecting anyone to be killing at that point.
Right.
All I'm expecting is for someone to be appreciative and to, just use the room as a workout room, because there's always, even if there aren't a lot of people left, like you can do your best to try and make sure that those people they're staying around because they want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not, you know, making them keel over laughing, at least do something interesting or work something out or try something and I keep bringing up Kinison, but you know, people like that are doing something different and unique and working, using the room the way it was originally intended and mm-hmm. as a workout room. Then I guess that's all I'm really concerned with is don't go up there and just shit all over the spot and be like, this is bullshit. I only get up at this time. Then it's like, I'm in the back of the room. I'm like, well, what a waste.
Yeah.
Why am I doing this?
We have, again, like lists of hundreds of comics that would die for this opportunity.
Yeah.
So it really does become like,
it's sad. I wish I did have more spots available. Cause I know, look, I know it's not, I'm not doing you this huge favor, but if you want me to be honest, those are the spots that are reserved. When I have one or two available and it's rare,
mm-hmm.
I give it to the people that I know are going to be appreciative of it
and cool as fuck.
And yeah, just cool.
Yeah.
Exactly. 1,000%. That's exactly right.
And going back to the entitlement thing or anything, like, When you have such a volume of comics that want to get on the stage, and you know, so many of them are awesome, cool people and appreciative. And some of them do deserve to get up all the time because they're relevant and they're going to kill every time. And they can, you know, here you still might not get up, you know, once every couple months.
Right.
Or and less.
There are so many people that fit that criteria, I think. And I want to give those people more spots, but it's like they're in that mid zone where they're not quite at that point yet of the people from the 80s that are just there. It didn't happen for them. It just is what it is. Mm-hmm. And they need to, you know, they're at that time and the twilight. I don't know how you, I guess I don't want to, yeah, I don't want to be, I'm not trying to be a dick about it. I'm just trying to be realistic where there's those comics that it didn't work out for them for whatever reason. Maybe they were close. It's like the scene in Pulp Fiction, you know, with when Marcellus Wallace is talking to Bruce Willis. He came close, you didn't quite make it.
Right.
You know, you almost did, but it didn't work out. I think there's a lot of comics that fit that criteria, and a lot of them don't want to accept it, or maybe they will hit it. I think it's rare. At this point, the odds are against them, but it happens once in a while.
Yeah, for sure.
The few spots I have available, they had their shot. So it's like those are going to be for the comics who have been recently passed, either by Tommy or myself over the last 2, maybe 3 years, who deserve their shot just like you had, you know? Just like when you were passed 6 or 7 years ago, you got your time to develop as a comic at those in those later spots. So that's why those spots are reserved for them. And that's why it was a real, that was one of the hardest things I had to do. But when I came in and those guys that were past 7 or 8 years ago, who aren't really doing anything right now and just kind of treading water, those guys went from 2 or 1 spot a week to none. Cause I had to make sure, since I brought in Spade and Rogan and Joey Diaz back and Madrigal and Greg Fitzsimmons and Anthony Jeselnik and all those guys, and Nikki Glaser and Godfrey and all these people, it ate up a lot of spots.
Totally.
So I had to get those spots from somewhere. So
what, this idea of relevancy too, and comedy's booming, and there's so many outlets too. Another thing that happens is, you know, there's a lot of TV shows and web series and things that showcase.
Yeah, there's so many different ways for you to catch a following, and it's like I really respect a lot of these people that understand that, and I think a lot of them do that. They realize how important it can be to have an online presence and to just try it, throw everything against the wall, see what sticks. You never know what's going to hit.
Totally.
What's going to go viral, and that can help.
And this brings up one final point is the idea of undeniability.
Yeah.
Which is the Steve Martin quote, just be undeniable.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's no magical formula for that, but there will always be a groundswell. And the example that comes to mind is Gerard, where two and a half years ago, it was like, if he wants to go up, we're putting him up, because he's undeniably right now important and doing innovative stuff, and people want to see him.
I remember the first time I saw Burr come through the Improv, and I think he was the first guy to go up on the Charlie. It was Charlie Murphy and Donnell Rawlings and Burr, and no one knew who the fuck Bill Burr was. And I remember seeing, I was just like, holy shit. Or Jeselnik. I remember Jeselnik opening up for Brian Posehn, being like, this guy's gonna be, he's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to be undeniable. Mulaney. And they need these people, you know? Yeah, that's the best. And that's kind of what we were saying in the beginning, where the best way to get past the store or to get spots at the store, it's not to email me or send me a DVD or have your agent call me. I'm going to know, because I see you're going to go up on a Monday. You're going to have your shot. Everyone's going to get a shot to go up. And you're going to go up in front of the booker, and you're going to knock them on their ass, or you're not. And you might get you'll get other opportunities, or at least to grow and then get another opportunity. But that's the best way to do it. Just keep working at it. And then word of mouth's going to get to the booker.
That word of mouth is key too. You're going to go up in front of the
booker. Absolutely.
There, you know, people are getting up all over town, and
you keep hearing the same names. And a lot of it's bullshit. A lot of it's agents and industry people just regurgitating the same names just because they don't want to stick out and take a chance. So you hear the same names. Well, like, you're not hearing the names that we say to each other. You're not hearing, you know, Fahim or Ingram or these people, or, you know. And I think now it's starting to be the ones we were saying 2 or 3 years ago that wasn't, you know, Santino or Theo Vaughn or these people or Costa. It's like now they're starting to come into play.
Right.
But no one in that field, a lot of them don't want to.
The industry, there's a few people in the industry that I very much
Dave Becky. That guy's, he's not only is he one of the greatest people I've ever met, but that guy knows what the fuck he's talking about. Most everything I've learned, I'd say most of the things I've learned, anything that guy says, I'm going to listen to. And I totally agree with where he's coming from. And you know, when he looks for someone, the talent, he's looking for an original voice. And, you know, someone that's, so, yeah, I think that's so important because you just see the same goddamn, you know, airplane food now is TSA or who's going to build the wall or Tinder. It's like, it's the same hacky jokes. It's just a different era. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking for an original voice.
That's always going to be
first and foremost.
And reminder that when you're going up around town, there will be a groundswell and people are going to talk.
Absolutely.
It's a thing, and we just reopened the lab as a showroom again, which I'm so excited about because for me, artistically, I can do a lot more stuff I want to do and bring in shows from around town and see a lot of new talent. But I've already, and we've only been open a month, seen it's kind of like this thing I saw a lot before, but I didn't think as much about it, which is, like we talked about before, people not bringing it or not taking it like seriously.
Yeah.
And seeing comics break out their notebook. And I'm not talking about Sarah Silverman.
No.
I'm talking about, you know, a comic that's been doing it for 3 years. And I'm in the room now watching. And I'm like, you just broke out a notebook. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing that in certain shows. But you should. I'm watching you right now and not seeing them bring it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I think, a bad habit that I know from personal experience. When I was doing stand-up, you kind of look up to certain people. And especially in the alti world, you know, there's so many comics that aren't necessarily performing. And it's just kind of cool and to kind of be messing around and not bringing it. But I want to start challenging people to, you know, you got to bring it, whether you're at some small bar in Silver Lake or here. Well, yeah.
Also, I think that the truth always comes out, but you really kind of get a sense of like, oh, this person is doing comedy to get laid, or this, you know, this person just wants to be famous, or, you know, you really get a good sense almost immediately of, oh, this, she's passionate about the art, or, oh, he's not going to be stopped. This guy, cause he loves comedy and he loves stand up. But a lot of people are doing it for the wrong reasons, but eventually, you know, they'll get burned out or they'll stop. And then it's one more spot I have available to give somebody else that deserves it.
I love it. Well, let's wrap this up.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Well, we're not done yet.
Oh.
There's still a trio of questions.
Oh, okay.
To dig really deep.
Oh, shit.
I am curious to know, what do you think of the term gatekeeper?
Oh, for specifically for the title of your podcast, I think it's tongue in cheek.
No, no, no.
I think, oh.
Oh, well, that's fine too. I mean, I love the title of the podcast.
I do too. I love it.
But for you personally, like when they bestowed that, like my boss is emailing other people, it's always, oh, Jamie's the gatekeeper at Melrose. And I always feel weird about that.
Yeah, I'm self-deprecating. I'm humble. Look, I'm not saying that I don't. I've absorbed comedy like a sponge for as long as I can remember. I remember watching Andy Kaufman religiously, at like 5 years old.
That's
or
amazing.
6 years old, and not understanding why I was laughing mm-hmm. while watching him, lip sync to Mighty Mouse. Years later, realizing why that's funny mm-hmm. and dissecting, but I've loved comedy for as long as I can remember, and I'm just a guy. Yeah, I happen to, you know, you and I happen to be the people that give people their spots, and it is what it is. So I guess technically we're the gatekeepers, but I think times have changed. It's not like before where, you know, I love that era, just Carson's show moving to Burbank from the mm-hmm. East Coast and just the history of stand-up and how much that meant to get up here or the Comedy Store at that time in front of Carson or his people. And then there's that famous story, and I don't know how much truth is in it, but I love it
mm-hmm.
just for the, it's probably bullshit, but I love the idea. And I think it's not so much that you don't pay attention to if it's real, true or not. I think it's what the story is about and what it says. And that is that Freddie Prinze apparently went up, did stand up for the first time or whatever one week at the store, and then went up. Mitzi put him up the next night in front, and someone from the Tonight Show happened to be in the crowd watching. They booked him for the Tonight Show that weekend. He went up, killed, and got a television deal, like all within a week mm-hmm. or 2 weeks or whatever. Maybe it was a month, maybe it was six, who knows. But it was a different era, man.
Well, now I feel like a comic that has any sort of anything like a year in will already have a manager and an agent.
Oh, yeah.
And they're already working that and developing them for a 10-year plan. And
definitely.
And I think Patton Oswalt, in his Montreal address a couple years ago, I don't know if you heard that. It's just there are no more gatekeepers. And obviously, in certain places, there's people in our position.
God, but I couldn't agree with him more.
It was such a great thing. I recommend any comic listen to that, but or find the transcript online. There are we have every avenue now as comics, as performers, as artists to put our stuff out there.
Yeah,
put it out there in every way you can, and create your own audience and just work towards that undeniability.
Definitely, yeah. That model's gone.
Yeah,
so gone, long gone.
Yeah, if you're relying,
this is the Wild West right now.
If you're relying on the Comedy Store or the Improv to make your career, you're putting all of your eggs in one basket. And
absolutely,
there's so many places to develop. And you'll get here, and I think you need to get to these clubs at some point, because by and large, I feel like, you know, a lot of comics that are termed alti, or you know, grew up, they all can perform at a club, and they can all perform in at Meltdown and UCB.
Absolutely, I think that's so huge what you just said about putting all your eggs in one basket, because all those comics for the last 4 or 5 years or however long that have been hating Tommy and holding on so tightly against their anger and fury towards Tommy, and I'm not saying that certain people don't have a valid reason to be upset. That's on you. But there's a lot of people for whatever reason who held on to that so tightly, and then once he left, realized that he wasn't the one holding them back.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're probably, I would assume, or might be a little confused and lost and are trying to come to terms with the fact that he wasn't the one holding their careers back.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a guy. Just like in 5 years, I'm sure there's going to be, or who knows, 2 years, seven, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
are going to be coming to the same realization that I'm not the one holding you back.
Yeah, I think I think the Store more so than the Improv, if you hang out, and you kind of have to, like, you know, work at the door, and there is kind of a system in place.
Yeah.
And you can eschew that, it sounds like, if you hit and you're ready to go.
Well, I really need to focus on that more. Now that I did what I had to do to on my end to try my best to make the club busier and to make the lineups packed and past certain people, I need to start focusing more on bringing back the old comedy institution, the university, the school, I need to try my best to try and bring that back. It's just tough because there's so few spots. Like, I'd love to pass so many people right now that deserve to be passed.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I don't have the spots. I just don't have the spots right now to do it. So I'm trying desperately to find ways to open up more spots. And I'm doing that by creating additional shows. Like mm-hmm. I did on Saturday, where we went from one to like three shows, two to three. So I'm trying my best to figure that out, because that's an important part, and I think it got lost in the shuffle initially, but mm-hmm. I'm going to try to focus some effort on, because that is important.
Totally. Well, last question, I think.
Okay.
Ghosts. Tell us about the Comedy Store ghosts.
Well, look, I am very skeptical. I've always been skeptical. I remain skeptical. I'm not going to say that closing up the store late at night during the witching hour at 3 a.m. by yourself in that cavernous labyrinth of a tomb.
That's a great description.
I mean, there's so much history.
And there's so many nooks and places where ghosts could live.
Oh, yeah. Well, I felt a lot of bad energy, and I've heard many stories recounted to me by people that have been there a lot longer than you mm-hmm. or I. It's considered one of the most haunted places in Los Angeles. And if you're interested, you can watch. It's very campy, but it's a fun little view to watch, I think, on YouTube, the Unsolved Mysteries edition of the Comedy Store edition.
How old is that?
Oh, it's old. They have Blake Clark, who's been in a lot of Sandler movies. He used to be a manager there. And then Joey Gaynor, an old comic, and then mm-hmm. Some of the old servers. It's fun. It's it's campy, but
I got to watch that.
I don't believe in it. I don't believe in ghosts. I wish I did. I really do. I really wish I did. But yeah, I felt energy, I guess. So maybe sure. I do. Maybe I believe in ghosts. I haven't seen anything.
I bring it up about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
We had a team of ghost
hunters
here.
I heard about that.
And we learned that definitively
mm-hmm.
Rodney Dangerfield
yeah.
and Mitch Hedberg
mm-hmm.
live at this club. They're ghosts.
Okay. I mean, that sounds like utter horseshit, but that's awesome.
No, I think it is.
I love it. Rodney's probably my favorite comic of all time.
It was so funny. The guy that was running it, like, he kept, until that point.
He said Mitch and Rodney are living in this club.
Well, no, we were doing this thing and flashlights are turning on in the showroom and we're like, who's here? And we started going through a list. And we're like,
well, back up. Mm-hmm. I know we were running. We're probably out of time here, but really quick. What? Flashlights were going on?
Oh, that's how you commune with the.
Oh, they were doing. I thought they were going off on their own.
No, there's flashlights everywhere. And then I guess ghosts can make the flashlights communicate.
Did that occur?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know if they had a remote control or not, but it would be weird. I thought it was for a TV thing, and
that's pretty awesome, though.
It was if it was just like a whole ruse, like then these are like eight people that just have a lot of time on their hands, and
like I trust the guy. Listen, Jeff Scott's been working there for years, and he swears up and down, and he recounts a story, and he tells it the same way every time. I just never saw it with my own eyes. I hope it's real.
I hope it's real too. And there's a lot of people here that do believe. And I think it adds to the fun and ridiculousness of... Let me ask you this one last thing.
Yeah.
I feel like my job booking here, I'm living in a sitcom. Because every day I show up to this place, and first of all, Rita, our GM, and Paige, and DJ, and everyone in the office are utter characters.
Yeah.
And then at like 5 o'clock, the servers start coming in, they're their own group of characters.
Yeah.
And the sound techs, and then comics. And everyone is a character, and I just feel like I'm living this crazy, weird dream where on any given day, you're like, oh, this is the episode where the ghost hunters come, and meanwhile, Rita's got her date tonight, and we're all talking about it. Do you feel like it's like that in the store?
That, by the way, that is the most perfect TiVo synopsis I've ever heard. Rita's got a date. That would be the episode title for sure. Absolutely, I feel that way. Yeah, for sure. This is not like working at, you know, at an insurance department.
No, every day is an insane adventure. And there's so many hardships and, you know, challenges that we deal with. But I pinch myself on any given night when, you know, the biggest names are walking through the door and the coolest things are happening on the stage. And I'm just having conversations till 3 a.m. with the best people.
I'm really doing my best now that I'm starting to come to terms with the fact that I can't, with the fact that I can't make anyone happy or everyone happy or whatever you want to call it. And I'm getting better with that each day. Cause you have how many years now?
I'll have been here 5 years.
5 years.
In
so
January.
You have so much more time to accept all that. So now that I'm right there, I'm starting to take, you know, because I felt like I was starting to take it for granted a little. So now I'm not as much.
Oh yeah,
I'm starting to enjoy it.
If I can tell you anything, there's waves. You know, there's months that go by where like you'll see me here 3 nights a week, and then like the last 6 weeks I've been here every single night.
Yeah,
and that's advice I would give anyone. It's like, you know. Pick your spots. I mean, you have a tougher job because you're also still managing at night, right?
Yeah, I'm still there at night to make sure. I just want to watch the, you know, see how the comics are doing, then watch the development comics when I can, and see how they're coming along. And then I got to make sure, you know, when people don't show up or they're late, I got to decide who's going to go up in their place and if someone's going to do a pop-in or if I'm going to put someone up who's there later in the lineup as a placeholder. So it's like... Yeah, but then, as you know, that means there's nowhere to hide. I'd much prefer to be there during the day where I don't have to look all these people in the eye every night and, you know.
Well, I tweeted once that booking a comedy club is 1% booking, 99% hiding.
Oh, hiding.
Oh, well, the first one was not hiding. Was
I remember that tweet. I'm sure I favorited it. I think I retweeted
apologizing.
As a matter of fact. Apologizing.
And then hiding was the sequel.
The intangible, yes.
Well, then my last question, and we'll wrap this up, is how long do you see yourself there? What is your end goal? Do you see yourself as a lifetime booker at the Comedy Store?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I really don't know what the future holds. I'm just, I just need to work harder on, God, I must have killed these fucking cliches today, but I need to live in the moment. I need to work harder on enjoying where I'm at the moment and just... Because they always say that, though. That's true. Like, there's no time like the present. Like, anytime these are the good old days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time you're like, God damn, that was a fun time. And then you're like, oh, but those, that was great. That was a great year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, this is then. 2 years from now, I'm going to be like, God, that was a great, that was fun. Oh my God, I had some good times that year.
Yeah, I guess it is contextual.
But I need to.
When you're in it, you don't always see it. But after 5 years here, I'll be like, oh yeah, 2012.
Yeah.
That's kind of what that year was about.
Right.
And with all the, you know, changeover and employees and the comics and everything you see. So yeah, enjoy every minute of it.
It's a new era.
Yeah. And it's an exciting new era.
In the industry, at the clubs, everywhere. Yeah, it truly, truly is a new era.
Well,
and I'm excited.
It's been great chatting with you.
You too, honestly.
And if you haven't been in the store in a while, go there. Also come here to the Hollywood Improv.
Definitely come
By the way, too. We're recording here at the...
I love this space. It's
We're in the
like,
most beautiful, enchanting Sideshow Network studios.
This is fantastic, and I'm not just... Again, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. Like, well, 100%. It's like a place that the Crane Brothers would want to like be a member of. That's what it feels like. It has a real Frasier feel.
It's. I was wondering what the Crane Brothers reference was. It was like a couple of birds.
Yeah, an exclusive smoke.
No, this
club.
Room, this table was in here. My first 6 months booking the club was in this
so
room.
You built this room around this table?
This table was twice as big, and it would be me working here alone with boxes and things falling apart. And now it's like a study from the 1930s.
It really is. I love it to death.
Well, on that, I'm going to sign off with this, which I think sums up everything we talked about.
Okay.
Work on your craft endlessly, be a professional, be undeniable, and be cool as fuck always.
For more episodes of Gatekeeper, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find me online at jamieflam.com and at jamieflam on Twitter. A very special thanks to the Sideshow Network, the Hollywood Improv, Andrew Stephen, Sean Merrick, Roddy Swearingen, and producer Buddy Peace for the awesome music at the top and end of this episode. And be sure to check out hollywood.improv.com for updates on great new shows coming up in the main room and the lab.